Hey guys, I am so excited for Ethos Training Systems to be the official sponsor for my podcast, Getting Zen with Gen Z. They are located at 314 West Institute Place, Chicago, and are Chicago's first sustainable strength, conditioning, and mobility group training facility. Their three main focuses are fat loss and conditioning, strength development, and injury prevention and mobility. Be sure to sign up for their new client promo at ethostrainingshy.com and make them your number one for all your training needs. Follow them on Instagram at Ethos Training Shy for awesome tips and updates. Getting Zen with Gen Z. Empowering, motivating, and inspiring you to live your happiest, healthiest life. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Getting Zen with Gen Z. Today's guest that I have is Kathy Miller. She is a licensed clinical professional counselor and a certified death midwife. I'm so excited to have her on, and she had reached out to me on my Facebook page. And at first I was a little like, who, a death midwife? What is this? I had never heard of such a thing, but I saw that we had some mutual friends, and it turns out we have a huge circle of friends and acquaintances in the holistic healthcare industry. So I first spoke with Kathy just to get a little bit of a sense of her and what she did and learn a little bit more. And as soon as I spoke with her on the phone, she was so professional. She was super positive, and just her voice, we connected, and she totally put me at ease because, as I'm sure we'll discuss, I'm sure a lot of people think that with death midwife, this might be a little bit morbid or, you know, just talking about death. But I want to welcome you, Kathy. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
When I talked to you on the phone, it was just everything went to, you know, at ease. And I was like, oh, this woman is amazing. And I learned so much just on that one phone call. But I was so excited to have you here because I feel like that's something that's so interesting and unique that a lot of people don't really talk about or hear about. And I think death obviously is something that people aren't as comfortable talking about. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself at first, I'm like, wow, getting Zen with Gen Z and we're going to talk about death. Is that going to be a little bit of a negative topic? But as we spoke, and I think going through the situation with my grandmother passing in September, I was like, no, this is actually something we should talk about and can be very positive. It doesn't have to be a negative conversation.
Right.
So I definitely want to start out with, and I think to, I want to mention the motto on your, when I saw the website also, before I'm 6 feet under, which I think is very creative and funny and I love it. But is plan for death, live your life. Mm-hmm. And that has such a positive spin on it as well. So I think that's incredible. But what is a death midwife?
So a death midwife is a person who is trained to witness and to support the individual who's dying as well as their loved ones, both before, during, and after death.
Okay.
It's very practically focused. There's a lot of practical aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
We believe people need to know what their options are instead of kind of going on autopilot, which we do because we're grieving.
Absolutely.
Right? And there's also an emotional and spiritual component too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being present for the next adventure, whatever that is, whatever people believe.
Absolutely. That's so, you know, I think during that time, it's obviously a time of stress mm-hmm. and grieving, and emotions are running high.
Yep.
So having someone there as a guide or a support, I think is crucial just mm-hmm. to guide you through and help make certain decisions that you might not emotionally be able to make.
Exactly. And that one of the things that I talk quite a bit about from an educational standpoint mm-hmm. is let's talk about all of this while everybody's healthy. It's not a crisis, right? Mm-hmm. We know when we're in crisis mode, our executive functioning goes offline. And
right.
we're that hamster in our brain, the primitive part goes, what yes. do I do? So I really am encouraging folks to have the conversation early and often, just like voting in Chicago. Happy voting day.
Right, I know. Election day.
But it's important to have those conversations. And then it's not just one conversation. Excuse me, mm-hmm. one conversation, you know, one and done.
Right.
It's a series of conversations because our life changes over the years. Situations change.
Absolutely.
But it's much easier to do a quick tweak mm-hmm. to our plans, our end-of-life plans, than it is to figure the whole thing out in a crisis.
Well, and that's a great point. You know, I'm somebody who is very much a believer in planning and being organized. And I think that's just because, you know, I own my own business mm-hmm. and I do so many different things in my career. So I have to be organized. But preparation is key for so many things. And it's like, why not with death?
Right.
And I know people are often afraid to have the conversation, mm-hmm. but you had brought something very valid up when we spoke on the phone about people's plans of how they would like to end, you know, end their life mm-hmm. in those last days or phases. But of being at home, surrounded by family and loved right. ones. And oftentimes, if you don't pre-plan for that, then that usually doesn't end up happening.
Right. The latest statistics that I've been able to find indicate that 80% of us, when we're asked, want to die at home, surrounded mm-hmm. by our loved ones, but only 20% of us do. And the interesting parallel to that is 80% of us believe it's really important to have end-of-life plans, mm-hmm. but only 20% of us actually make them. Right?
And do you think that's out of fear?
I think it's out of fear. I think it's out of a number of things. There are different cultural components to that. There are different familial components, you know, whether a family is able to have tough conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Whether a family, you know, I hear all the time when I do death cafes that, you know, I have the younger people saying, I've tried to talk to my parents about this so many times, and they just are like, oh, I don't want to talk about that. Or you know, I'm not ready to die yet. Why are we talking about this?
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, the parents are also saying the same thing to me, right? Like, I've tried to talk to my kids about that, and they're giving me the stiff arm.
Right. Because they don't want to even think about that
exactly.
happening.
Exactly.
And that's just the topic of, that's where I think death becomes, you know, nobody wants to die or think about death.
Sure.
But, you know, being able to prepare for that and plan for it, that allows you to just live your life to the fullest and know that, you know, I think being in that situation, when my grandmother had her strokes and, you know, fortunately, there's 5 kids, so there's a lot of people that can come together, you know, to help make mm-hmm. decisions. But, and she had a lot of stuff that she wanted kind of in place as far as, like, you know, the wake and funeral arrangements, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you have someone's house and finances and you need to deal with their insurance and, mm-hmm. you know, them staying in a facility and making all those decisions and figuring out what is best for that person to be taken care of, because that's a huge, you know, task.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be there, you know, to help support, but ultimately you need people to come in and help you. You need, you
yes.
know, if it's a nursing facility or people mm-hmm. coming into the house, you need that help and support. But, you know, having those conversations are difficult. And now my mom is been very proactive because she's like, you know, I want to have something in place so that you guys don't have to figure all of that out while we're going through something. God forbid something happens.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I want you guys to be prepared, whether it be, you know, extra insurance to be able to cover, you know, mm-hmm. if they need to go into a facility or whatever it may be financially to cover that end. There's so many different things I'm sure you'd have to discuss, and that's one little piece of it. But being in that situation with my grandmother has made her want to have the conversation of, what are we going to do so you guys don't, we can take that burden and worry off of you, or help somehow, and just be proactive.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad to hear that. Mm-hmm. And it's often that first experience where someone is responsible, right, for doing every billion of things that needs to be done when someone passes. And that kind of like gives them that V8 moment of, whoa, I don't want my kids to have to go through this or my loved ones to have to go through this. And that's a really great thing that your mom's doing, because there are so many things. And you do need a team. And that's one of the things one of the many things I love about being a death midwife is being able to be that guide for families to say, you know, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? You know, are there conversations that need to be had? You know, is there a facilitation of a forgiveness or a connection, or is it just a function of kind of directing traffic? You know, when I help people plan home funerals, it's a big deal. There's a lot going on, and my job, my first priority, is to make it as much as possible an opportunity for the family of the loved one who's dying to have to do nothing except sit with their loved one.
Right.
Everything else, we manage.
Yeah. Because I feel like oftentimes people are kind of in overdrive and a little detached to kind of just get through and get everything done, all the planning, make sure everything's in place. Mm-hmm. And then I can imagine, you know, it could take maybe a matter of like after a week or a couple weeks, like that grief then hits them.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point, because part of the after that we focus on is, you know, somewhere along the line, let's blame the Victorians, that we have this idea that we should be done grieving in a year. We should be over it and moving on. Right. And that's just not how it works. Mm-hmm. In many cases, it's 2 years.
Okay.
Where it's like it comes out of the blue and takes you out at the knees because you think you've moved on. Your friends and family are, for the most part, thinking you've moved on. And people, you know, people are great in a crisis and for maybe 6 or 8 weeks afterwards. And then it's, you know, life goes on.
Right.
And that's when people start to feel super alone. Mm-hmm. And that's when people start to really feel that grief and think that there's something wrong with them. And there just isn't. Grief doesn't have a timetable.
No. And you're allowed to feel your feelings and emotions. You know, it's someone that was in your life for so long and that you loved and have so many memories with and still love and still can communicate and talk to and still have those memories close to you. But you're always, I think for the rest of your life, you're always going to have moments. Of course, it gets easier to deal with and kind of accept. But you're allowed to feel those feelings.
You are. And so many people second guess themselves about that, right? Because again, it can be an uncomfortable time. And none of us are really taught how to talk to someone who's grieving, what to say and what not to say, what's helpful and what just is not helpful. And so I like to tell folks that I work with, the families I work with, that, you know, the depth of grief that you're feeling is in direct proportion to the depth of love that you had for this person. And so it's okay to feel those depths because you're honoring
that love.
Yeah.
That's a great, beautiful way to put it.
And I think it helps people feel a little bit better about allowing those feelings, mm-hmm. which is important for healing.
Absolutely. It's not, I think sometimes people think it's like a sign of weakness mm-hmm. or they shouldn't be sad and, you know, want to celebrate. And of course you want to celebrate the, you know, your loved one's life, but, you're going to be sad. You're going to grieve. You're going to have good days, bad days. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it's better to acknowledge those feelings mm-hmm. and then be able to kind of, you know, let them go and move on a bit, then hold everything inside.
Yes. The path to healing, and let's just, you know, let's be clear. Grief changes you.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to be that person you were before.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get over it, right? We don't forget it. We mm-hmm. learn how to expand our lives to live with it. And as you said, you're going to have days where it's going to be fresh again, years into the, you know, future. And there's going to be days that you have some joy around it, right? Mm-hmm. You have a memory that comes up, or interesting folks who are like, you know, I was walking down the street and somebody walked by me wearing the same scent.
Ah, right? Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it just took me there in a
100%.
Minute. 100%. So we're going to have those reminders, but it does do honor to the relationship to just wrap your arms around them and feel what you need to feel.
Mm. And, you know, I think having experienced this with my Nana, you know, having the, I don't know that I would have been, I'd like to think I would have been as open about this conversation, but I just think it gave me so much insight to actually be there experiencing it mm-hmm. and so involved.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you know, with someone as, you know, they passed, mm-hmm. Passed on. But I understand now how important it is to have these conversations and know that it's okay to talk about. And that's why I wanted you to come on and be able to share your insight with people so they realize that it's, you know, it's something positive to discuss and mm-hmm. plan for.
It is. And, you know, sometimes it's easier to start with the practical stuff because it mm-hmm. is a highly charged emotion, right? Just acknowledging that the conversation is important brings up all the feels, mm-hmm. right?
About, oh, for sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes talking about the practical stuff is a way to ease into it. And sometimes I will suggest people do something like talk to your loved one about the last funeral that you attended together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, you know, Aunt Mary's funeral, what'd you think about all those flowers in the room? You know, there are people who think that having masses and masses of flowers is a testament, right? Is an honor for people,
mm-hmm.
which is great. Some people feel like, well, you know what? Why don't we spend that money and make a charitable contribution to something that was important to our loved one, right? And that's great too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about what's right or wrong. It's about what was important to your loved one.
And understanding the options.
Exactly.
And what you can do
yeah,
in honor
so
of that
much.
Person. So let's talk about, there's something you talked about before, a death cafe that I definitely want to talk about in a second and know what that is. But how do you, what services do you offer your clients? Like, take us through, you know, what exactly your role is and how you best work with your clients and how you're, you know, you very much remind me of, you know, my Nana was in hospice, the last, you know, like couple months, I would say. And then we also had Journey Care who followed up afterwards
mm-hmm.
and basically offered support and counseling for like 18 months
yes.
after, which mm-hmm. was amazing. You know, just to help support the family. And they were all just like angels on earth. It was mm-hmm. amazing. But kind of guide us through that, how, what services you offer and how you work with your clients and everything you kind of help manage them with.
Okay. So I look at the services that I do, and I just want to say as an aside, some death midwives do things differently mm-hmm. or focus in certain areas. So, I divide them into like three main categories, okay. right? There's the education component,
mm-hmm.
which is would include the death cafes, speaking in the community, stuff that I blogs and stuff that I do, right, is kind of getting the word out.
Right.
Then there's a planning component, and that's kind of sitting down with folks and helping them map out their end of life plans, what mm-hmm. they're thinking, what their wishes are, what their concerns are, what they'd like to know more about. And often in the planning phase, I will also, if the family is looking for suggestions for an estate attorney or an elder care specialist, or they want to interview hospice places, yes. right? I'll get them hooked up.
So you're kind of the connector.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the conversation piece is, I guess, kind of a larger umbrella, right? So it's from the very first, hey, have you thought about your end-of-life plans, to hear what your options are, and there's so many, to helping the family cohere as a team to support mm-hmm. the person who's dying and support their wishes. And that's the place where my training as a therapist often comes in.
Right? I was going to say, I'm sure people are almost, can put a little more trust or know. I feel like that credential is definitely something that can put them at ease also and be invaluable to mm-hmm. this. I mean, I feel like it's just, it works together very nicely.
It does. I think it helps people feel a little more comfortable mm-hmm. that I have their best interests at heart,
yes.
that I have the best interests of their loved ones at heart. And that even when families disagree, because newsflash, they do.
They will.
I can help facilitate some kind of compromise to help everybody feel like the thing that's most important to them is being heard and right. acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really those three pieces, the conversation, the education, the planning. Those are the practical pieces.
Okay.
Then the more emotional pieces would involve helping a family plan a home funeral. What is that like? Working on the hospice team with the physicians, with palliative care, with whatever facility they're in, or if they are lucky enough to be able to be at home because of pre-planning or because mm-hmm. of the circumstances, to kind of manage all of that for people. I really see our role, because we're not a medical professional, right? Mm-hmm. So we're not doing hospice's job or palliative care's job, but what we're doing is to help facilitate the work that they do and fill the gaps.
So you're managing everything. Basically.
Yeah. I mean, even with hospice, right? You have the best hospice care.
Uh-huh.
You don't have your hospice person there with you 24/7.
Right.
Right. So it becomes this dance between the services that you have, family, friends, other folks mm-hmm. plugging in.
Absolutely.
And me helping teach folks about, okay, these are the things you need to think about if your loved one is at home dying. This is how, and once your loved one passes away, understanding that that's not an emergency,
mm-hmm.
right? That you can take the time to be with your person.
Right.
You don't have to call 911.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to call and have the body whisked away.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a family decides they would like to have a home funeral, I mean, there are certain laws and whatnot in Illinois that you have to follow, of course. And I help educate them about those as well. You know, helping the family, teaching the family how to you know, gently wash the body, how to dress the body, how to decorate the body, having all the family members involved in some way, right? So there have been cases where the families will tell stories or read poetry or play music, or the children will write little love notes and, tuck them. I mean, it's a way to get everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many things you can do.
Oh my gosh. It's endless. And there's new things all the time. It's really kind of exciting.
I've never realized that you can do a home funeral.
Mm-hmm. So in Illinois, you do have to use the services of a funeral director to transport the body, right?
Okay,
There are different laws in different states.
Uh-huh.
So part of what I would do then for a family is, if they decide they want to do a home funeral, is to hook them up with some home funeral friendly funeral directors.
Yes.
Who would say, sure, I would be happy to help transport the body from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
So from, for example, the hospital to your home, and then from your home to whatever the body disposition choice is.
Okay. Okay. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I feel like those services, just being that guide and that support, is so invaluable for people, because it is hard. You have all these people kind of, you know, the nursing facility or mm-hmm. hospice or all of that like taking place, but figuring that out and just also like, oh, we didn't realize we need this person, or we need this to properly deal with the finances, or we need this, you know, to get all those things in place, because a lot of those things also take a lot of time.
Sure.
Especially when it comes to the financial piece mm-hmm. and estates and all of that, you can't just, you know, mm-hmm. it's not something that is a week long process.
No.
So having that pre-planned well in advance, even that part of it, I think is probably the most essential.
Yeah. It makes everything else easier in the sense that you're not running around like a chicken with your head cut mm-hmm. off trying to check all the boxes that, by the way, you don't even know which boxes to be checking.
Right.
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 You know, that first experience for people of managing a funeral,
mm-hmm.
Because we don't talk about death, although we're getting better. yay.
Spreading the knowledge right here.
Most folks are like, I don't even know where to start here. So where do they start? They go right to the funeral, right? The funeral
director
parlor, right?
Yep.
Director, mm-hmm. And kind of turn it over. And in many cases, they don't want to, but they don't know what their options are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they haven't done the pre-planning. And I encourage people, you know, if you decide that you want the full-on contemporary funeral, right? You want the embalming and the wake and the mass and the whole shebang.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I will support you in that. May I suggest that you interview different funeral places and see which one is most willing to meet your needs, fit your budget.
Right.
Right.
That's all important. I was going to say that's huge.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how expensive things can be.
Yes.
And that you have options.
Right.
When it comes to that.
Yeah. The standard contemporary funeral that I just described, for example, will on average run folks about 10 grand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of money.
It is.
Now, if you've done all your pre-planning, you know, there are options to pre-plan funerals and prepay funerals, and there's all kinds of options.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Which is another area that, you know, we need some education about.
Because people don't realize that either.
Well, they don't, or they do, but they don't understand the fine print of prepaying for a funeral.
Oh.
So there's potentially some pitfalls there,
okay.
Right? But, you know, that fear of doing something wrong or not knowing what to do
mm-hmm.
puts us into that autopilot mode of, you know, I'm just going to turn this over to the expert who, yes, may be expert, right, in their work, but are they expert in what your loved one wanted?
Yes.
I don't know.
That's a great point, because I think we are in autopilot and it's like, okay, now this has to get done.
Right.
Because a lot of things, even things you might have realized, oh, I should have done this 5 years ago, but mm-hmm. I didn't. Mm-hmm. And now we're at this point and it just has to be complete and I need to get these plans in place. Mm-hmm. So then it is you can't be as selective.
Right.
And you can't really have the time, I think, to think about honoring your loved ones' wishes or really think about like the details that they would have maybe appreciated and that the family would appreciate.
Yes. I can't tell you how many people, after I speak in the community or do educational events, there's always one person who will come up to me afterwards and say some version of, I did my best for my sister, my mom, whoever. But I don't know what they wanted. And so I'm kind of carrying around this guilt about, did I do what they wanted?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so final. You don't get a do-over on that one.
Right.
So people are really, I mean, I've had people sobbing, saying to me,
aww,
you know, I wish I had known this,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I think I would have done things differently. And I don't want anyone to feel like that.
Yeah. And you know, and there's something in that too, which it's, you know, they didn't have the knowledge and they did what they could. They did what yep. they thought was best at that moment.
Exactly. You know, the when you know better, you do better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I want people to cut themselves some slack.
Right.
But it also points out the importance of, you know, kind of front loading, right?
Yes. And the conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, knowledge is power.
Yep.
We know that. Mm-hmm. And also when we address our fears, I think then they become a little bit less scary mm-hmm. when we really look at, you know, a lot of people obviously fear end of life.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can kind of understand it a little more and make it as special or have plans in place, I think it does become a little less scary.
I think it gives us room to really focus on living our lives.
Mm-hmm. Not having that worry.
Right. Figuring out what's important to us. I do this exercise sometimes in death cafes where I will say, you know, let's just say that you found out today that you have 1 year to live. Are you living the life that at the end of that year, you would be like, yeah, I lived my life, every minute of it? And if not, what can you shift to be able to feel like you're really living every minute of your life?
That's a great exercise. In general, I always tell a lot of my clients, I'm like, you know, life is short.
Mm-hmm.
So even just having the motivation, you know, to live out your dreams and do the things that are important to you, because we can tend to just sit idle and like waste a lot of time mm-hmm. when it's like, life is short. You don't know what can happen.
None of us know. And even with the best planning, right, mm-hmm. there still could be a surprise. But the point is that we've put the work in. Mm-hmm. I mean, death is a mystery. None of us know really what happens after that. But planning for it, talking about it, accepting it, remembering, you know, not if I die, but when, that doesn't have to be a mystery.
Right.
And so that's really my goal is to help people understand that it's to their benefit on so many levels and to the benefit of their loved one on mm-hmm. so many levels to be having these conversations on an ongoing basis. And, you know, when I'm feeling particularly smarty pantsish, I'll be like,
I love
you know,
it.
y'all are going to be together at Thanksgiving or the holidays. That's a perfect time to touch base about what's going on because you're all going to be fighting anyhow. So, you know, let's get this conversation started.
Let's figure it out. No time like the holidays,
right?
Just go for it.
Family time.
Yes, exactly. And so you deal with, so the people that you work with, obviously, for family members, for personally, mm-hmm. for someone's own, you know, end of life, and then pets mm-hmm. also.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So what do you think the majority do you think is for family members that you deal with, or?
For me, yeah.
Okay.
My sister-in-law, Marnie, who's also a death midwife, she lives in Philadelphia, and she's tailored her practice to work mainly with pets.
Okay.
Which is perfect because she's like the pet whisperer.
Oh, that's great. You guys have your niches.
We do.
Yeah.
But just like with our human loved ones, in many cases, when we lose a beloved pet, mm-hmm. It's even trickier to grieve because there are folks who are like, well, just get another dog. What's the big deal? It's a dog, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, it's not just a dog. And so helping people make space to grieve that loss.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's a big deal.
I mean, I oftentimes say that, my ex-husband and I had to put down our baby, Bianca, a few years ago. And honestly, that was harder than like going through our divorce. I mean, it was the hardest, most heartbreaking process to go through.
It's very hard. And I think what people forget is that when we have those conversations with our human loved ones, they can tell us what they want.
You have to be the advocate.
Yeah.
And it's so
we're totally on the hot seat for making the decisions for our pets and hopefully, you know, with the advice of our vets and other people, mm-hmm. making the right decision at the right time. But that's such a huge responsibility and it just adds to the grief.
Absolutely. You are solely, you don't know what is best. You can't communicate.
Right.
That's the hardest thing. And just knowing that you are making the best decision for them.
Exactly.
As much as human, I feel like, yes, you have that opportunity to kind of communicate mostly, mm-hmm. Unless obviously it's something that's sudden. But, it's just a whole different grief and emotion. She was like our baby.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They're a family member just as much as your two-legged ones.
Right. Exactly. So this runs in the family, apparently, but how did you, tell us about your background and how did you become a death midwife? How did this even happen?
Well, the short story is there were a couple of really significant deaths in my family as a young person. And it really got me thinking at the time, like, why does it have to be this way? Why? And what I'm talking about specifically is embalming, which mm-hmm. I find disturbing. Mm-hmm. That's my own deal. But it really got me thinking, like, isn't there another way to be able to honor our loved ones without this kind of show. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, it just kind of percolated.
Right.
And after I became a therapist and started working with folks who are grieving.
Was that kind of your main niche?
It was one of them.
Okay.
It kind of opened the door to maybe there's something that can be done here mm-hmm. on a larger scale to help people navigate this better. And just about the time I was, trying to invent that wheel.
Yeah.
I learned about death midwifery and I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly the thing. And so I reached out to the woman who I ultimately trained with, who does trainings all over the country, and did her training. And it was just, it was that click.
Yes. Right? Yep. You knew it. You had that connection. Yep. It was right.
And it just was like, okay, this is exactly the way. I don't have to invent this.
Right.
And in fact, this has been going on for millennia, right? We've always cared for our own dead, you know, up until around the Civil War when embalming became a thing. And it gradually then became the purview of the funeral industry. Okay. Versus the family.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're really doing is not inventing something new. We're really reclaiming what we've always done.
Right.
And helping people remember that they know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's in our DNA.
Yeah.
And making it okay for people to do that.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Mm.
I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of, I don't want to say politics revolving around that, but I'm sure, you know, there are, but understanding that, and obviously you working with anybody who has, you know, you're kind of not biased on the sense, I mean,
no.
You're going to work with anybody's wishes and
yes.
Kind of what they want that's best for their mm-hmm. Family members. But I never knew that, like, we did that prior. I mean, I've only yeah. known of, you know, really
mm-hmm.
embalming
and a lot
and
of people
and
don't.
All of that. Yeah, I mean, that's
yeah,
that's just
it was
so
you
interesting.
Know, primarily the women who
uh-huh.
cared for the person who was dying, and who prepared the body, and you know, 250 years ago, you had that's where the community came together,
right?
And you had. Folks sitting with the loved one, folks taking care of the person who is dead, folks minding the children, folks cooking, folks digging the grave, folks building the coffin.
Which a lot of that is still very similar in the, you know,
yes.
support, I would say, in
yes.
the family support and loved one. I mean, at least
yeah.
in our Italian family.
Yes, very much so, right?
The culture, yes.
Yeah, and in fact, my sister-in-law that I mentioned lives in an old home in Philadelphia, and they actually have what's called a waking door. The door to their cellar is taller and more narrow than the other doors. And when I was visiting, you know, they're doing reno and whatnot, and I was like, that's a waking door. And they were like, what are you talking about?
Oh my gosh, what is that?
The family would take the door off the hinges, place it flat on sawhorses or some kind of a podium thing.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the body would be laid out in people's parlors, right? Back in the day.
Yeah.
Every house had one because
oh,
everybody
wow.
dies.
Well, that's right.
Right? But it's such an interesting part of history that I think, again, has been forgotten, you know, because just in terms of, you know, the difference between the age of the New England towns and homes versus, you know, as you start going west across the country,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that there are old homes here that have waking doors, but I suppose there could be.
Wow, that is so intriguing. That's so interesting. Look at this history.
Right?
I mean, there's so much more to this conversation.
There's tons.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's incredible.
It's pretty interesting. And I think it, you know, those kinds of anecdotes also help people understand, oh, well, my great-grandparents did this and
mm-hmm.
their parents and their parents and their parents. I can do this.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I if this resonates with me,
mm-hmm.
I can learn how to do this. And that, you know, the death midwifery training is designed so that it fits what your goal is. So there are people who become death midwives because they just want to take care of their own family.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
or loved, other mm-hmm. loved ones. There are those who are like, hey, this is something I can actually make a career of. I want to create this business to help people. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of permutations in between. So it's a really useful training just from a knowledge standpoint and an option standpoint for people to understand, I didn't know I could do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's so much knowledge and information mm-hmm. and just knowing what the possibilities are.
Yeah. That's really important. And part of knowing this, as you said earlier, that knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. And so I have had families come back to me and say, I kind of got some pushback at the hospital or nursing home about taking my loved one home. And they were like, well, you can't do that. That's illegal. Well, no, it isn't. You have to do it under the right circumstances that I talked
Absolutely.
About. But it's not illegal. Mm-hmm. And there are folks who are like, I thought embalming was the law. No, it is not the law in any state. There are certain circumstances where it would be required, mm-hmm. but those are fairly few and far between.
Well, in certain cultures,
they don't. No, certain of the Jewish and Muslim cultures,
I was gonna say, yeah,
never embalm and uh-huh. never have, and that's built into their end of life plans of how they do things. Mm-hmm. So there's an educational component too for the medical folks who may have always done things a certain way and think that that's the only way it can be done. And it's nice to have the balance of the medical folks who are trained to help people, to save people, to cure people, to make things as good as they can mm-hmm. for them, right? And the folks on the other side who understand that we all die. Let's talk about quantity, quality of life. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, is that particular decision something that your loved one wants? If you have somebody who says, I don't care how much it costs, I don't care how many tubes you have to stick in me, do everything to keep me alive. Mm-hmm. Well, that's one thing.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Yep.
Or if you have somebody who says,
I don't want any of that.
Don't, if they start coming towards me to intubate me,
yeah.
I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Okay. Right. So my job is to not tell people how to do their death, right? My job is to support the decisions that they make.
Right. Honor what
exactly.
their wants and desires are.
And facilitate that with as much ease for them as possible.
Wow. That's just amazing. I'm just so glad that we are having this conversation. And I really think a lot of people are going to get a lot of information out of this and insight, and it's going to make them think and just be a little more open mm-hmm. to what the possibilities are and what they can do and having the conversation.
Right. And often I will suggest to people who are very new to this mm-hmm. to tell them, you know what, go to a death cafe.
Yeah, what happens at the death cafe?
Okay, so
I want to get that in before we have to close out.
The death cafe, they're done all over the world. This was an idea that a man in London put together probably 10 or so years ago. And it's basically like a salon, right? It's this group of people who gather together to share questions, ideas, concerns, to just listen, to offer support to one another. But there's no agenda. There's no, okay, first we're going to do this and then we're going to do that. I am not the expert. In fact, I walk away from those having learned so much every time. It's amazing because it's different every time, right?
Well, I'm sure there's different questions. There's different people. There's, absolutely. A lot of different things can come
up. Totally. And my job is basically just to facilitate the group, mm-hmm. which often I don't have to because it just takes on a life of its own.
Wow.
And it's so cool. The connections that people make. I have one person come who needs something and there'll be magically somebody in the group who can help them with that.
Wow.
It happens every time.
Well, I'm sure people go too to kind of share their experiences and insight too. It's almost like a way of, it's therapeutic too, I would think.
I think it's therapeutic in a general sense for people to know that they're with their peeps mm-hmm. and that they can say what they need to say or want to say without being judged or having somebody, you know, recoil in horror. Like, why are you talking about that?
Right.
You know,
it's a safe,
that's what shuts
space.
It down.
Yeah.
You know, people have had an experience where somebody has been like, you know, dude, you're really morbid. Why are you talking about this? So to be able to be in the group with the people who want to hear it.
Yeah.
Is
you can
really
be comfortable.
Freeing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really freeing. So the Death Cafes have a website. You can plug in your zip code and it brings up all of the ones that are happening in the area. And you just go. They're free. Tea and cake is served because, you know, it started in England and it's important to have a treat when you're talking about tough stuff. I'm all about it.
Yes, I would agree. Yes. I would agree.
So that's a really good segue into starting the conversation in a way that you can feel more confident about.
Yes.
Like, okay, you know, so-and-so said how they've approached it with their parents. I'm going to try that.
Well, it's a comfortable, welcoming space.
Yes.
Where, you know, people, it's inviting and mm-hmm. you can have that conversation openly and there is no judgment. And
no. And in fact, often people will come several times, mm-hmm. And learn something every single time, or come back and say, okay, I had the conversation with my loved one and it went really well. Or it kind of went sideways. So I need some more support here on what I might try next time.
Right. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm so happy you were able to come here today and we were able to have this conversation because I was one of those people too, where, you know, and I'm not going to say I don't fear, you know, end of life. And I think more so it's about my loved ones, mm-hmm. that's, you know, the scary thing mm-hmm. to think about. But having that conversation after experiencing it, I've witnessed it. I see it. I know what's kind of important and what would definitely be helpful so that you can really spend those last moments that they're, you know, with your loved one and have quality time with them mm-hmm. instead of stressing and worrying about getting all these other pieces in place that you could have done before.
Absolutely. The thing about being a death midwife is, you know, we feel that no one should die alone. Mm-hmm. And so being able to support the practical stuff around that helps to facilitate the family and the loved ones being able to be truly present for their person when they die.
I'm going to get emotional.
It's okay.
You know, thankfully when my Nuna passed, we had the whole family, we knew, you know, we had the whole family come through, mm-hmm. nieces, nephews, cousins, everybody. And, my oldest cousin and I were the last to leave before just all five kids were there. Mm-hmm. And I really believe my uncle had literally just flown in that afternoon. I believe they wait. Mm-hmm. And they all spent the night and it, you know, she passed during the night. They were all there.
Yep.
But I have to say the work that you do, hospice, journey care, all those, the people, the nursing facilities, that's such a difficult job and career and profession. And I truly feel like those people are literally angels, you know, just helping because their priority is that person mm-hmm. passing and making sure that they have the respect and the dignity and the love and support
right.
in their transition. And that's a huge priority to them, which you can see that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I would like for someday, and hopefully soon, to have that transition be just as joyful in some ways mm-hmm. as a birth. You know, you think about how everyone looks forward to that and how the families gather together and they're celebrating this moment, right? I like to think about dying as another birth into, mm-hmm. again, whatever happens after that.
Right. It's a celebration. I mean, it is, there's grief, there's sadness,
yeah.
of course, but it is a celebration of that person's life and their love and the mm-hmm. impact that they've made mm-hmm. while here. And, you know, just embracing that and coming together, it brings people together.
Right.
As well.
It deserves that.
Yeah. And, you know, having that support, I've seen so many people who don't have family or people mm-hmm. there for them. And I think that's one of, you know, the hardest things to see. And so, you know, really just coming together and being there as a support for your family and your loved ones, I think is just truly so important. We have to be grateful for that, to mm-hmm. have each other in that.
Yep.
Oh, but Kathy, thank you so much. I'm like, oh, this is, you're just so amazing. Oh, you truly are. And just your energy, your vibe, it's just, I mean, so positive. So thank you so much for taking this time today.
My pleasure. I'm always happy to talk about it.
Oh, and I want you to share, where can people reach out and find you, connect, follow you? Tell us everything.
Okay. So the website for my death midwifery practice is called beforeim6feetunder.com, and it's the number 6. Okay. And there are a variety of ways there to learn, to plug in. You can join our private Facebook page where folks who are feeling a little like, I want to feel this out, I'm not quite sure. It's a very safe private place to do okay. that. I also host regular death cafes in Skokie.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you go to thedeathcafe.com and plug in Windy City Death Cafe, those are the ones that I do. But there are so many, mm-hmm. and I encourage people to go to as many different ones because they're all different and, you know,
yeah.
they're all good. So those are the two main ways.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously there's a contact form on the website to reach out if people have specific things they'd like to discuss.
Perfect. What is, before we close out here, what is like the craziest reaction you've gotten from somebody when you tell them what you do?
Well, I guess it's a very similar reaction that I get when I tell people that I'm a therapist. Right? They either go, can I tell you something about my mom? Or they'll be like, really? I'm going to go get a drink,
yeah.
right? Goodbye. And I always tell people, you know, they don't teach you mind reading until you're in a doctorate program. So you're safe with me.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I love it. That's amazing. So funny. Well, thank you again so much. Guys, please reach out, Kathy Miller, and, you know, just to get any helpful information or questions you have, she can help you address anything regarding, you know, end of life and planning and all of that. And any questions you guys have for me or any guests or topics you want to hear me talk about, you can reach out on my Facebook page. It's Jen Z. And then on Instagram @JZBeautyandTheBeast. So thanks, guys. I'll talk to you next time. Bye.